Like this new setup right here in the sales room, the conference room. We can see the big buildings in San Francisco. The sun is out. Mm-hmm. Good morning to everybody out there getting off their graveyard shift. Business is booming with Baldy in town. So you know the overnight dancers are lining up, baby. The graveyard shift workers, the truck drivers. It is big time money time. Chiefs and Niners on Sunday. We got the Warriors in their final preseason game at Chase against the LA Lakers. See if they could go 6-0. Warriors are in town. We got a lot going on here. Baseball playoffs. Baldy, of course, is here. Shasky's in the building looking like he just played 18 innings. Did you play for the Yankees last night? You got the where's that jersey from, man? That's nice.
This is our city little baseball program jersey. Doesn't it look good?
The Cardinal hat.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, it brings me, we were playing the Kawhi Leonard stuff, and I know you want to get into Chiefs Niners. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into the coaching trees. But I do want to pick your brain on something. Kawhi Leonard, basketball player for the Clippers. Baldy, I'm sure you've heard of him.
Championship with Toronto.
Absolutely. Yep. He's an absolute legend killer. The guy's body is telling him he needs to, you know, not back play off anymore. Yeah. And, you know, this is a difficult thing for a lot of athletes to look in the mirror and say it's time. I guess that brings me to Tua, the whole Tua situation. And I've been thinking long and hard about this. Like, he's going to come back and play, it feels like. Man, how do you approach this if you're a family member, a teammate, if you're him, the individual? Because there's so many angles to this thing. Like, clearly, when the guy gets knocked as many times as he had, I don't know.
You know, I've been to all kinds of reunions, guys that I played with, you know, and I'm still, like, fortunately, I'm good. But a lot of my teammates aren't. You know, the hits, and some guys are just more susceptible to concussions. I mean, Ron Jaworski is 70-something years old now. LT, you're talking about LT, like, he got whacked his whole career. He's fine. You know, some guys are just more susceptible to brain injuries and concussions and the after effects of that. And look, I feel like Tua is just going to play and it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
Like last year, okay, we played 18 games. It never happened. But I feel like it's going to happen. And you just can't, like, you can't go. So I talked to a player just recently. He's a great player. And he just had his fourth concussion in 13 years. I go, when's enough? He goes, look, I go, are you concerned? He goes, I signed up for this. Now, it's easy to say that if you're 35, I signed up for this.
Right.
Because you're not thinking when you're 50 or 60 or your family or anything else like that. But you have to think about that. Like, Tua is a wonderful person. Everybody has to have a career after your career. Like, it doesn't end just because your career ended. You've got another life to live or other lives. Like, you have to think about your composition. And it's, if I was Tua, I would advise him not to play.
But I think the hard part, and I agree with everything you're saying, but what if this just makes the individual happy? So, for example, me and B talk about this. You know, my dad passed away this year. Yeah. He loved sugar, like loved it. And I would say, Dad, it's going to kill you. It's going to kill you. He says, Joe, I like the sugar in my drink. Or, for example, what if playing football literally makes him happy?
Here's the difference between sugar and brain injuries. Is you can still enjoy your life and go play golf and go to the 49er games and see, you know, all that. And you can, you get diabetes, whatever the issue is. But you can still live until, until it gets taken from you. But it's the quality of life. Once your brain starts to non-function, you know, like I just talked to a Hall of Famer this summer, right? I don't want to mention his name right now, but he's like right now, and he's young, like he's 50. But right now he has to write every note down in his phone so he can remember everything the next day.
Wow.
And he's 50.
Wow.
He's a Hall of Fame player. He's a great, he played the game the right way, all that stuff. But, you know, he knows that it's not going to be there forever. We just saw Brett Favre, you know, come out and say, you know, what his condition is. Like, some guys, the quality of life is just not going to be good.
What? So I don't understand this with a concussion, right? What goes through that protocol? What is like Tua or anybody suffers a concussion? Like Malik Nabers hasn't played the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
And he hasn't been cleared. So what are they going through?
Baseline testing that everybody has. And so you go back and you take these cognitive tests, and they measure it against your baseline when you're healthy. And so if it's not up to where it has to be, that could be one thing. It could be symptoms, headaches, you know, nausea, all that kind of stuff. It could be some of that. Like Lane Johnson got a concussion in New Orleans week 3. And, you know, he's texting me that he's thrown up in the locker room.
Ugh.
And so like that, he knew he had a concussion. I don't know if it was diagnosed yet, but, you know, he was basically saying, I'm not coming back out. You know, and so, you know, I remember, I'll never forget this. Aaron Rodgers had one year in Green Bay, and they said the remedy, one of the remedies was to basically stay in a dark room.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let the sunlight really mm-hmm. affect you, right? So that week, he stayed in this dark room because, and all he did was visualize the offense, like in the way it's supposed to be. Like he put his brain on football, took his brain off the field, out of the game plan, all that stuff. And that was the year that he won a Super Bowl, like 2010, whatever year that was.
Wow.
And he said the offense never crystallized like it did while that period of where he was just rehabilitating in a dark room.
Damn, that's insane. So so Tua, because we saw the hit against Buffalo Thursday Night Football.
Look, what his head hit the ground. You know, and you know, concussion is, you know, your brain sits in a fluid inside the cranium.
Mm-hmm.
There's a body of fluid. And it's a whiplash, right? It's the same thing that happens in the car. You know, you get whiplashed, and so the brain goes up against the cranium and gets bruised. So there's varying different degrees mm-hmm. of damage, depending mm-hmm. what part of the brain, hindbrain, forebrain, whatever, of the cerebellum, whatever it might be. And there's a, you know, there's a bruising of it. And that's the first one. Then there's a, you know, and then, you know, can the brain recover? And so nobody really knows what CTE is until you pass away.
Right.
They can't diagnose it while you're alive.
And then there's a component of the financials where he signs a big fat extension to over $200 million. And now Miami's got to think on the football field to say, man, we got a quarterback who may, you know, one more concussion. He may be done. We may see Steve Young eyes closed on Monday Night Football after Lawrence Phillips missed a block.
But it's also the weird things that happen with
exactly.
his hand.
Exactly.
That's like as soon as you see all of that
the fingers is going in different directions.
Like, first time we saw it, like, it scared the hell out of me because I'd never seen that before in a concussion. You know, I've probably had some where you're going up to the line of scrimmage and you're seeing double.
Yeah, you get your bell
rung. And you're just
trying
to, like, get your bell rung. That's what we used to call it, right? And now you're, like, seeing this disfiguration of Tua's hands. Like, it looks terrible.
They've got to have a backup plan, Shasky.
I don't know what it is. And you know the league can't be happy. I've had three concussions in there. They all are different. Some lasted weeks.
Yep.
Some I was good 3-4 days later. It's a trip. That brings me to CMC, which is different. Okay, CMC has got the bilateral Achilles tendonitis.
Yes.
Now, I've seen reports it's linked to an Achilles rupture. I've seen others say it has zero effect on the Achilles, whatever. What do you do in this situation? I mean, even if you take a ton of time off, you could re-injure one of these legs and have an Achilles tear, and then you're out for a year, year and a half, who knows how long, like Dre Greenlaw. I mean, do you just come back and just see where it goes? Do you wait till the end of the season? Like, how do you navigate the CMC injury?
I don't know, because I don't know how severe, if it is a damage to the Achilles tendon where it's weakened. I got to believe if you're not working out, because that's the worst thing you could do, it's got to rest. Whatever the rehabilitation is the Achilles weakened by the tendonitis and the inflammation of that tendon? And if it is, then you don't know, because you can't really do anything to test it. And so it's he just overworked both tendons. And we all see all the stuff on Instagram about what he's doing. And like, he does the same stuff game day. Like, he's doing these hops and these jumps and, you know, and it, right now it's heavily inflamed. The last thing you want to do is start taking these anti-inflammatories, whatever, to take the inflammation out, because then are you masking the injury?
Yeah.
So that's not good. So I think it's a very difficult path to navigate here, Joe. And the last thing you want is to put him out there at any point and something happens to the Achilles.
I know.
Yep. Ed McCaffrey says he's just, the hardest part about Chris McCaffrey is you got to scale him back. It's hard to scale him back. And the guy just wants to work.
But that's
what got him
to the position he's in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's tough to tell him, hey, rein it back. Don't work hard.
I know.
Shanahan made the joke at his wedding where he's like, he's probably thinking about his footwork walking down the aisle, getting married. I mean, it's so believable here with Chris McCaffrey. So hopefully he's all right here. But again, I think it's a bonus if they get anything from him this season. And obviously the impact has been massive.
Well, I would say,
they're 12-27 in the red zone, Baldy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the red zone thing is tricky in this league right now, because, I mean, there's some things defenses can do where you just, you can look to the two receiver side, three receiver side, and if they're sitting in these quarter looks and there's just in zone and there's seven guys with basically their toes on the goal line, like, there's, and, you know, as fast as these guys can react, it's just hard some days. I mean, you could draw up all the red zone offense. If you could get them in predictable situations, a little easier against man to go find your man beater, get the ball out. But that's where you're seeing Brock like literally scramble so often down there in the red zone, just waiting for somebody to uncover.
Mm-hmm. We asked you about who you would want to run your team, like Sean McVay. And now I want to ask, like, if you were to pick any scheme for your defense, you're starting from scratch, so you don't have any personnel that dictates this. What's the scheme you would run at, on defense in this modern day?
What Brian Flores is doing in Minnesota is tricky. It's really tricky. Now, Detroit's going up there. You know, Minnesota's undefeated. They're playing with the lead. So Brian's like a little bit, but you really, it could be any down, but they're putting seven up there at the line of scrimmage. You don't really know who's coming. They want you to go max protection, and then they're going to bail, and they're going to get seven or eight guys covering against your three receivers.
Is it a 5-2, 3-4, 4-3? What is it?
They literally have, it's the Golden State Warriors. It's positionless football.
Huh. Yep.
Pat Jones, Josh Metellus. You go through the list of guys. Andrew Van Ginkle. Like, these guys are playmakers in this scheme. And it's in the back end, you got Harrison Smith,
yep,
who's got 35 career interceptions,
OG.
Cade Bynum. Like, these guys are very good on the back end and just protecting, keeping every, like, you know, it's just Star Wars, keeping everything in front of you. Like, it is, it's tricky right now.
Stephon Gilmore as well, who had the game winning interception
Gilmore,
in London.
I mean, but Gilmore now, like, I did a show years ago. We used to film it at the Pro Bowl and Super Bowl called Film Sessions.
Oh,
we
would
sit down
that.
With
yeah.
these guys.
Yep.
And it was an NFL Films production. And I did not know Stephon Gilmore. It was a year after his Defensive Player of the Year. And he's pretty quiet. But he comes in, the guy, he will blow your mind at how smart he is and how much football he knows. And by formation, splits, coordinators, receiver, routes you can run, runs you. He is... like, he makes everybody smarter.
That doesn't surprise me. Belichick's number one attribute for all of his players, intelligence, yep, in terms of scheme and being able to... So when I listen to McCourty talk on Sunday nights,
he's amazing.
I think he's brilliant.
He's fantastic at what he does.
He's really good.
McCourty is fantastic. Let's see get to some calls here. We'll rat-a-tat-tat some of these guys
let's
here.
Go.
Let's go to Oreo Cookie in Oakland.
Hey,
he's been
Oreo
on hold for a while. We love Oreo Cookie.
What's up,
Oreo Cookie?
Hey, what up, Baldy? What up, Shasky, Monte?
What's up, baby?
Happy Friday. Baldy, I got a couple of questions for you. Put on your general manager hat. Looking at the 49ers here, they're shown to give up some draft picks for an unproven guy coming out of college. Shout out Trey Lance. Do you give three first-round picks for Max Crosby?
No. No, I mean, look, Max and... It would be unfair to put Max and Nick on the same field together. I don't think you give up three first-round picks, and not because Max isn't worth it. And Raiders will do that deal, I think, right now. Max wants to be a Raider for life. There's no question about it. But if he had a chance, probably on those conditions, I mean, he would go wherever he would be. But if you put Max in this defense, like I'm putting him in the Super Bowl right now.
Wow. What else you got, Oreo Cookie?
That's a heavy price to pay.
What else you got, Oreo Cookie?
For this game on the weekend, man, I'm looking at Trent Williams directly at you. Your Super Bowl sucked, buddy. I want to run it 20 times to the left side.
What, he had the penalty, the one penalty that was costly? I don't know. Some of those penalties, I don't know. They're a left-handed team. They like to go left behind him and Banks. Like, no, there's no question about it. So you're going to see that. You're going to see some of those runs and some of those play-action passes and stuff.
What about with Dominic Pooney now? Because, like, Chris Jones lined up over that right guard over and over and over again. It felt like in certain situations. Does Pooney kind of change the map for them up front?
Or does Chris Jones go somewhere else?
Chris Jones is going to find the pigeon. All right, it might be the right tackle.
It might be Colton McKivitt.
He can play a wide nine.
Right.
Like, the guy is just different than everybody else. Because nobody has his size and power and footwork. Like, his movement is elite. Last game they played was against New Orleans. And literally, New Orleans had backup centers and guards. They literally grabbed him. Like, every play. Literally grabbed him, but they didn't call anything. Maybe they call one holding call, but like that's all they could do to try to slow him down.
Every time I watch him, you know, like when you go to Disneyland, they got Mickey Mouse has this huge hand.
Yeah,
he's got this huge hand, and before the linemen can get their hand, he just bangs them on the shoulder.
He's great at grabbing wrists.
Yeah,
he grabs wrists, and once what that does is it lifts the offensive lineman's center of gravity up.
Well, They ran this stat on ESPN on that Monday Night Football
game. Yeah, give it to me.
I screenshotted it. Look at me. I'm a maniac. I got the purse right there. But it's Chris Jones, 108 incompletions forced
by pressure. That's incredible.
That's the most by a D-tackle in the last 5 years.
He's the most dominant interior player in this league right now. And it's not about sacks. It's just about pressure and what he does. Like, Joe Burrow is still running for his life when they played, in the championship game. There's nobody else built like him. That moves like him and plays the volume of plays that he plays.
It felt like he came out of nowhere. It felt like, you know, we were talking about all these other D tackles and Ndamukong Suh and all these other guys. Yeah. And I think, you know, Chris Jones, the preseason game when the Niners played him in 2019 in the Super Bowl, they had a preseason game at Arrowhead Stadium. I'll never forget it. And Sasky thinks I'm a maniac for this. Jimmy Garoppolo's leading him down, and Chris Jones had a batted ball on the fourth down in the preseason game.
Yeah.
And then, so he's doing it again in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. And I was like, wait, he was doing this in a preseason game. We didn't adjust to this.
Mississippi State kid. And if you want defensive linemen, Jeffrey Simmons, Fletcher Cox, go to Mississippi
State. Montez Sweat.
Yeah. They've been putting them out. Now, that defense line coach, he was so good, I think Nick took him to Alabama. I think his name is Brian Baker. He might be at Alabama still. I'm not sure.
Baldy, you are just a wealth of knowledge. I love it. It's like you just start going deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole.
I love the positional coaches stuff.
Yeah.
Like Bruce Arians, quarterback coach, with Phil Sims, that famous clip. Who's this quarterback coach? Bruce Arians. Who is this guy?
Like the other day, I hear that Caleb has a really good game. Not the one in London, but the week before. So I'm not pretty good friends with Caleb. I'm going to do that game in Washington next week, Chicago, Washington.
Wow.
Caleb and Jaden. It's
going to be
good. They already flexed it.
Yeah.
The 425 window. and rightfully so. But I remember, I hear that Caleb called his quarterback coach right after he watched the game. And he just had, this 300-yard game, and Chicago put up a bunch of points. And this is what you need about Caleb. He's critical of himself on his footwork, where his eyes was in this play. He should have gone here. He's not celebrating a win or playing well or a second win in a row or anything. He's fixing what he did wrong. And that's what all players should do. Not all of them do it.
So you're older like us in the sense of you remember what the 80s were like when Washington was a powerhouse and when the Chicago Bears were powerhouses. Yeah. I said on Monday, we came in here, I go, it's just nice as a fan of the league to have watchable teams in Washington and Chicago where they have functional quarterbacks. Yeah. It feels like hope has been restored to these major markets.
They ran this play to Cole Kmet for the opening touchdown in London last week.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Right? The play is unbelievable.
Yep.
It's not like they just invented it. It's been used before, but it was executed so well with Keenan Allen coming in ghost motion and then the fake to DeAndre Swift and it hit Cole Kmet down the seam. And I just said, Chicago Bear fans, you've been around for 100 years. You've never seen a play like this. I don't know if you're ready for this. But this is a brand new day in Chicago. Because they've never had a passing offense. No. They've never had anybody where Jim McMahon was great, but Jim McMahon, they had guys.
Cutler had moments.
Jay Cutler had some moments.
Yeah, moments.
But he didn't really have the personality you want to. Caleb has got a smile on his face every day. Caleb knows he's good. But now Caleb's improving. He's winning from the pocket. They got a run game. It's coming together.
It is coming together.
And I'm
together.
Chicago, just rejoice. Just enjoy this. You've never seen this before. Get your tickets now because it's going to be the biggest ticket in town.
It is, no doubt. And they have a defense out there, Chicago, too. Defense is underrated. That division is. I want to get to that division in just a second. I know we want to get to the coaching tree here. Let's get to some calls. RJ Fairfield, then we get to Fazil in Fremont. RJ, my main man. What's going on, RJ?
What's up, Baldy? It's chest day today, man, so I'm getting my workout in.
What angle are you hitting? Yeah. Are you hitting with the flies?
Incline, bench, what are we rocking?
No, it's straight old school, but I'm using the Smith machine. It's a home workout.
All right.
Okay. Hey, Baldy, quick question. So 95.7 is big on prayers before game day.
Yeah.
And what player needs to say, what player on the 49ers need to say the prayers before this game?
Oh, this is a Fred Warner game all the way. This is Fred. Fred, he's going to lead the huddle, down there on the field before they break to go to the locker room. And they come, and Fred's leading this one. Fred knows what this one is all about. It's like him and Mahomes. The middle of the field is his. Here comes Kelsey. I expect the ball to get knocked loose.
RJ's talking about the biggest prayer. Who needs to say a prayer? I was thinking about Colt McKivitz. If number 95 lines up in front of him, I'm thinking, Reggie White lined up. It's like, oh, dear God.
You know what's funny about that? So I remember I was playing in Indianapolis, and we're playing Philadelphia. We're 0-3. Our season's like on the brink already. We're playing Philadelphia in the at the vet.
Oh.
And I'm the right guard. And Reggie either lined up over the right tackle or over the center in a Bear defense. That's it. That's where he lined up. The first play of the game, he lines up over me.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm like,
was he talking to you?
No, he did talk during the game, but not to me. So I'll tell you the story. So my right tackle is Kevin Call. We called him the Creature, right? And he was like a great very nickname. Skitsy guy to begin with. Like he was just a head case. So the whole first quarter, Reggie lines up over me. And I'm like, what the hell's Reggie? Like, he thinks I'm the weak link. So I grab Reggie every play, and I hold him for dear life. And he doesn't beat me, all right? So he goes back over the right tackle where he belonged, right? I'm get out of here, Reggie. So it was funny because we became teammates in Philly years later. But anyways, he goes over the right tackle, and he's like, he slams Kevin Call like over the pile, like just a hump move, right? And he says, well, so we're getting out of the pile, and Reggie in that deep voice, he goes, hey, meet me after the game. So Kevin comes after into the huddle after the play. He's like, hey, did you hear that? And I'm like, yeah. He said, meet me after the game. So Kevin's like, well, what's he talking about? Like, what's he want to do? So he's like nervous. So I know Reggie has his prayer service after the game. Yeah, he wants to like, because Kevin had some issues off the field. So he wants to help him, right? So, but I didn't let Kevin know. I wanted him to be edgy, right? So the whole game was like, so we win on the final play, right?
That's great.
Trudeau hits Billy Brooks in the back of the end zone. We win the game on the final play.
Wow.
So Kevin's like, he's not even celebrating. Like, I'm like, well, we won a game. So Kevin's like, hey, dude, you coming with me? You got my back? I'm like, yeah, just get out there. So all Reggie wanted was Kevin to, like, just meet him for the prayer service after the game. I kept him on edge all day.
That's hilarious. He wasn't even after the game. Big Reggie White. Was Jerome Brown on that defense back then?
Yeah, Jerome had passed away in 91.
Okay.
Like, I came to the Eagles in 92.
So I've heard legendary stories from players who played against him and from him, from his time with interviews and whatnot, that Larry Allen used to say, you got to get off the tracks when the train's coming through. And he would line up, he'd get into his stance, he'd go, woo, woo, like, as in the play was going to go right through whoever was in front of him.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was a tractor trailer, man. I mean, Larry, nobody... At NFL Films, our film in my machine goes back to 2005. He was in San Francisco then.
2006. It's the greatest offensive lineman season in my eyes I'd ever seen in person. It was when Gore ran for 1,600 yards. He was outstanding.
It was Frank's best year.
Yep.
You know, and it was they were like inseparable.
Yes.
Like they went everywhere together.
North You'd Turner. See,
like it was that was like an amazing, and that was at the end of Larry's career.
Yep.
Like the very end. I remember I was doing a 49er game that year. And so I'm doing a game with Dick Stockton, I think. So Larry, so I want Larry Allen to come into the meeting, right, to a production meeting. And Dick's like, why are you getting Larry Allen? I go, because he's the best player in the league. He goes, yeah, but he doesn't say anything. I've had him in the... I go, wait, if you don't like the meeting, Dick, then just leave. Go to lunch early. I'm sitting here with Larry. I'm talking to Larry Allen. I got Larry Allen laughing so hard. We were talking about bench pressing, lifting weights, knocking people down. And, you know, Larry's just like that deep laugh of his. I had so much, like, the thing went on for 30 minutes. And everybody's like, Baldy, man, like, honestly, you and him are having a great time. But none of us are. I'm like, Larry was unbelievable, man.
Bam. Sonoma State.
Sonoma State.
Isn't that incredible?
They don't have a football program anymore.
It's just incredible. I'm telling you, I'm not joking. Like, I've watched some great with Trent. Everybody, Larry Allen, for my money, was one of the greatest seasons I've ever seen in my life.
When he passed away, I think last year, it broke my heart, man. Everybody, he was the gold standard because he could play center, he could play guard, he could tackle. Like, he's the best that's ever played.
Wow.
Anthony Munoz, you could, like, take him out there.
Munoz was awesome.
He was unbelievable, too.
The Pro Bowl videos of him just bench pressing and being in those skills competitions are legendary.
Yeah.
Legendary. It was hard to hate him. Even though he was a Cowboy, it was hard for me as a Niner fan to say, I hate Larry Allen. No, it's like, damn, Larry Allen's a badass. Rest in peace to him,
Gosh,
man.
Rest in peace to him. Those Cowboy 49er games back then. Like, the talent level, the Hall of Famers. Like, it was like, you know, it was
It's an all-star game.
Yeah, Baldy, all-star people game. Don't even bring up Jay Novacek. He was awesome.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
Novacek was awesome.
He killed him in that 92 game.
Awesome. NFC Championship.
Alvin Harper. So I was in Philly. We won our first playoff game that year against the Saints. Oh, second game was in Dallas against the Cowboys. Their first year they won a Super Bowl. And like we had Seth Joyner to cover Jay Novacek. Seth was an unbelievable player. Borderline Hall of Fame player. I don't know if he is or not. But like his job was Novacek. I mean, what Aikman did with Novacek, I mean, if it was 3rd and 11, Novacek was catching the pass for 12. Like, it was unreal.
So we're looking this up, and we'll get to it on the other side. Now that we're talking coaches, we'll get to the coaching tree, but Rich Kotite was your coach that year. I got to get into that.
Rich Kotite from New York City?
Yeah. We're going to get into that on the other side. That's coming up, brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking.